Thank you very much, and thank you very much to the organisers for inviting me here. It's lovely to be here. I hope you can hear me all right. I'm presenting a paper that's based on work I did with my colleagues, Bertrand Maitre, Christopher Whelan and Helen Russell. And we're looking at the Irish data for the period 2013. So I'm going to talk a little bit, first of all, about the background. The Great Recession in Ireland, as you know, Ireland had a particularly deep recession. And also looking at, and this is related to the recession in Ireland as well, because the recession shows why we do, in fact, need multidimensional indicators of social inclusion and quality of life. It's not enough simply to rely on income. I'm going to be talking about a particular methodology that we use in order to construct a multidimensional indicator of quality of life, and that's the methodology, the adjusted headcount ratio methodology that was developed by Alkier and Foster. And using that methodology, I'll show some of the strengths of the approach in terms of looking at differences in the level and composition of quality of life problems by age group and social class, and then I'll summarise and draw out some of the implications of the findings. So first of all, a little bit on the recession in Ireland, and this slide shows the unemployment rate going back to the beginning of the 2000s up until 2015, and also the tax take, the government total tax take. The unemployment rate before the recession was very low, it was 4%, and it had been at around that level, between 4 and 5% for a number of years. And you can see very clearly when the recession hit, you had a huge surge in unemployment, rising initially by 2009 up to 13%, peaking at about 15% in 2012, 2013, before it began to decline. So there was a very severe impact on unemployment, a severe impact on GDP, and as a consequence, of course, a very severe impact as well on the government tax take. And this just shows the figure, with 2007 Q4 set at 10, so the level is compared to 2007. You can see that it was rising before the recession struck, the amount of tax that was being collected, income tax, because you had economic growth, you had a growth in the number of people employed, because for the first time in our history, we had in-migration, we had people wanting to come to Ireland to work because we were having an economic boom. The tax take also increased because you had a lot of income from property-related taxes, not a property tax per se, but taxes related to property transactions. When housing was being purchased, you had a stamp duty tax that was bringing in a lot of income. And of course, part of what happened with the recession was you had a collapse in the property market. House prices dropped to about 50% of their level over the period following 2008. So you had a big decline in property transactions, you had a big decline in taxes from income. And as well as that, this chart doesn't actually show that, but the government had to bail out the banks, and of course that imposed a huge cost on the exchequer as well in Ireland. And just to pinpoint the period of time I'm going to be talking about, I'm going to be talking about the SILC Survey on Income and Living Conditions data from 2013. There was a special module on well-being in that year, and that was at the point where unemployment was just beginning to recover. Taxes hadn't yet really increased to their former levels. They were still well below. You still had a very high unemployment rate, but it was beginning to come down again. Oops, I've gone the wrong direction. That's not a good thing to do. Right. Another aspect of the Great Recession in Ireland, you're probably aware of the importance of the indicator of income poverty in general. It's basically the percentage of the population that's below 50% of median income after adjusting for household size and composition. And if you look at the poverty rate in Ireland, oops, I've gone the wrong way again. All right, I'll keep my finger on the forward button so that doesn't happen. Just to show you the poverty rate, first of all, This is what happened to the poverty rate between 2004, into the recession, and up until 2013. And you might ask yourself, where was the recession here? Well, this really is a failure of the income poverty indicator, because what happened, of course, when you have a huge recession like we had in Ireland, is that incomes collapse. The median income was reduced and the poverty threshold was reduced. So the real changes in people's living circumstances are not showing up in terms of an increased poverty rate. So income has a disadvantage from that perspective, and it's not capturing the real differences in terms of people's experience and in terms of the hardship they're experiencing. Another side of it, apart from the collapse in the threshold, of course, is that the Irish welfare system puts a lot of emphasis on cash transfers. And so the government at the time of the recession did everything they could to try to maintain the basic pensions, the basic social welfare rates, and that had consequences in terms of the income poverty rate. In measuring social inclusion in Ireland, we don't rely on income. We also have an indicator called basic deprivation, and that involves being unable to afford two or more of 11 very basic goods and services, and they include things like having adequate food, being able to afford heating for the home, being able to afford clothing, being able to afford to replace worn-out furniture, and engage in very basic social activities. And this indicator has been used since the 1990s as a supplement to the indicator of income poverty. And when you look at the figures on basic deprivation, yeah, you can see the recession there. So even though it wasn't showing up in terms of income poverty, in terms of the percentage of people below the threshold, the indicator of basic deprivation was showing the big increase in hardship beginning after 2007. And in fact, it hasn't started to improve yet by 2013, which is the data I'm showing here. In fact, by the latest data, 2014, it had stabilised, but it hasn't begun to reduce significantly yet. Another indicator that we use quite a bit is the indicator of economic stress. And this is an indicator based on experiencing two or more of four economic stressors, such as having difficulty in making ends meet, having to go into debt to meet ordinary living expenses, finding housing costs a burden, or running into arrears on utility bills. And that follows the exact same pattern as basic deprivation. You could see a big increase as the recession struck. And in fact, it hasn't begun to improve yet, according to the figures from 2013. The other interesting thing about the economic stress indicator is that if you look at the relationship between income deciles in Ireland and economic stress, what you can see as the recession struck was that people towards the middle of the income distribution were also beginning to experience high levels of economic stress. Their incomes had fallen, obviously, as a result of the recession, but they were also, many of them, in a position where they may have had a reduction in income from work because one or both partners was now unemployed. The number of hours of work was reduced, or for people working in the public sector, there were cuts in income, while at the same time, obligations such as housing costs were not reduced, so they still had to pay the mortgage. The pressure was still there to pay for other everyday goods and services. This slide just shows a little bit about changes that I mentioned already in social protection. This would be the welfare type income. The first one here is child benefit, and that's the only universal benefit in the Irish system. It's a benefit that's worth roughly €30 per week per child. Child benefit had increased between 2008 and 2009, and it was cut subsequently. So 2007 is 100. If you take 2007 as 100, you can see that by 2012, 2013, 2014, it was down to about 80% of that level in real terms. The next figure is just an illustrative figure for one-parent families, But it also shows the pattern for people who were in receipt of unemployment payments, people with children on unemployment payments. The level increased initially, so some of the savings from reducing child benefit were used to increase the child part of the benefit associated with lone parenthood or associated with being unemployed. That lasted until 2010, where fiscal pressures meant that these also had to be cut. Pensioners were relatively untouched, so this is a group that wasn't as severely affected by the recession as others. In fact, early on in the recession, when there were talks about reducing pension levels, we had marches on the street of pensioners in Ireland. You probably haven't heard an awful lot about protests in Ireland, but the pensioners were out there early on, and the government responded so that pensions were not cut as much as other social benefits. So this is going to have a bearing on the composition, if you like, of quality of life problems when I start to look at those in a moment. So based on what we just looked at, you can see why you would want to not rely on income, and in particular not want to rely on income poverty to measure quality of life and social inclusion. But in general, even apart from the issues in Ireland and issues associated with the recession, there's an increasing emphasis on focusing on dimensions other than income, dimensions other than GDP. There's the beyond GDP movement, the arguments made by the Sen-Stiglitz-Fitoussi Commission, development of indices such as the OECD Better Life Index. And in fact, the capability approach to poverty and social inclusion is inherently multidimensional because it's concerned not just with income or what people can afford to do or with material resources, but what people are enabled to do and to be across a whole range of dimensions. And of course, the question arises, how are we going to combine these different dimensions? And there have been some very simple approaches that might work if you have a small number of dimensions, and then some more sophisticated and complex approaches that are required if you're going to take account of a very large number of dimensions. The union approach would consider somebody as being deprived if they were lacking or on any of the dimensions being considered. And an example of that is the European Commission measure of social inclusion or being at risk of social inclusion, which involves being either below the 60% poverty threshold or experiencing severe material deprivation. That means lacking four or more of nine items, or being in a jobless household. So that's a union approach. The intersection approach, on the other hand, means that you would only consider somebody as being deprived, multidimensionally deprived, if they were lacking on all of the indicators. As you can imagine, the union approach is going to identify a bigger group unless you have very strict thresholds on each dimension, and the intersection approach is going to identify a much smaller group. Other techniques, such as latent class analysis and the adjusted headcount ratio, were developed in order to deal with this problem of how to combine indicators that don't necessarily coincide with one another and that can measure very different aspects of well-being and quality of life. This slide just gives an indication of some of the range of dimensions that have been included in quality of life indicators. The first one is the Canadian Index of Well-being. Then you have the OECD Better Life Index. The Eurofound work was some work we did, commissioned by Eurofound, myself and my colleagues, using the European Quality of Life Survey a number of years ago. SG refers to the sponsorship group on measuring progress, well-being and sustainable development. And the final one is the present analysis. Virtually all of the different approaches include an indicator of material living standard. Virtually all of them include an indicator of health, and they try to include indicators of neighbourhood or environment. Now, I'll say a little bit more in a minute about why we included certain dimensions and why we excluded certain dimensions, but fundamentally, it depends on what you want to use the index for. What are the key dimensions that you want to capture? What are the key groups you want to compare? So, for instance, if you are looking at a single country such as Ireland, there's no point in including things that don't vary across the population of Ireland, like the Gini coefficient, for instance, that you might want to include if you're looking cross-country. So just to say a little bit about the methodology before I go through it step by step. The Alkire and Foster method was first used in the context of understanding multidimensional disadvantage or multidimensional poverty in the context of developing countries. And as I mentioned already, one of the strengths of this approach is it allows us to combine a relatively large number of indicators, and it allows you to look at the level of multidimensional disadvantage and also the profile of multidimensional disadvantage. So for a particular group, is their disadvantage mainly driven by health problems or by material problems or by problems with the area where they live, for instance? And those can be very significant when comparing groups. It's also very explicit about the decisions it makes, and I'll talk about that in a minute by looking at the three different sets of decisions. The data we use are the data for Ireland from 2013, from the European SILC, the Survey of Income and Living Conditions. In 2013, there was a special module on well-being, and we used some of those variables combined with the core variables on income and living standards that have been part of the work we've been doing over time on social inclusion and poverty. Because the special module focused on adults who were interviewed in person, we restrict our sample to that group. So we're not including children here. We're looking at adults aged 16 and over who were interviewed directly. So anybody who was interviewed by proxy, we have to exclude, unfortunately, because the data is not available for them. Nevertheless, we do have 5,700 cases, which is a substantial number. There are three steps with the adjusted headcount ratio. The first step is to decide which dimensions and indicators are to be used, and then sometimes you may decide that you want to weight some dimensions or some indicators more highly than others. That's the first set of decisions. The second then is, on each dimension, what threshold are you going to use? In other words, how much of a problem does somebody have in terms of health or in terms of living standard, in order for them to be considered as disadvantaged on that dimension or as experiencing a deficit. So for each of the indicators, a threshold needs to be chosen. And then in combining the indicators, you have to decide on the overall or multidimensional threshold. In other words, on how many of the indicators must the person have a problem before they're considered as having a multidimensional quality of life problem. So in choosing the indicators, the choice of dimensions, as I mentioned already, depends on what you want to use the indicator for. What groups are you thinking of comparing? So obviously we did want to cover the main domains of quality of life, such as material resources, physical and emotional well-being, physical health and mental health, housing and social relationships. As I mentioned, we're looking at Ireland, so we're not going to try to include things that might be very, very important for quality of life, but don't vary within Ireland, such as the overall level of inequality, the general democratic process, and so on. The other thing we wanted to do in this analysis is to compare life cycle stages. So this placed an additional constraint in that we couldn't really include indicators that were not applicable to certain life cycle stages. So, for instance, if you want to include retired people, talking about quality of work, talking about work-life balance is not going to be relevant. And it would make it difficult to compare retired people to people who are not retired, because there's an indicator that they can't possibly be deprived on. So if you find they're less deprived multidimensionally, is it because of your choice of indicators? Similarly, education, an important good, it would be considered to be an important element of somebody's quality of life, but it's difficult to devise a measure of education that works across the age range, because you had such differences in the achieved level of education that were typical for different cohorts of the Irish population. So for this purpose, we don't include education either. And we're also constrained by data availability. So, for instance, you might have wanted to include an indicator of perceived social exclusion, whether the person feels socially excluded or looked down upon. Unfortunately, that wasn't available in the SILC data. Nevertheless, as you'll see, we do include a very wide range of dimensions. I don't know how that happened. Okay, I'll just hum while I catch up with where I was. I must have hit the home button. I took my finger off the... Now, was that where I was? Yeah, this is where I am. Okay, right. Keep finger on keyboard. Okay. So these are the dimensions that we include. We include two indicators of material disadvantage because each has its own strengths. You saw already the limitations associated with income poverty. I'll talk about another limitation in a moment, but it didn't capture what was happening very well in the recession. We include that, and we also include the indicator of deprivation. I'll talk in a moment about the thresholds, the choice of thresholds, but I'll just go through the indicators very quickly. We have an indicator of financial strain or economic stress, and it's based on five items, difficulty making ends meet, housing costs are found to be a burden, the person or the household has to go into debt to meet ordinary living expenses, they've been in arrears in the past year on some of their expenses, and they're not in a position to save. Self-rated health, we just have the single item. The categories range from very good, good, fair, bad, or very bad. Mental distress is based on the World Health Organization, a five-item indicator, which includes frequently feeling nervous, depressed, or down, and infrequently feeling happy or calm. Two indicators of housing problems. We kept these two indicators separate because they didn't correlate very highly. They seem to be affecting different groups in the population. One is an indicator of crowding, pressure on the space. The second is an indicator of quality problems based on having one of two types of quality problems, dampness or insufficient light. Neighbourhood problems, that's a three-item indicator based on problems with noise, pollution or crime in the area. Lacking social support is a two-item indicator, not having somebody that the person can talk to or not having somebody that one can call on for help. Institutional mistrust is a three-item indicator measuring a low level of trust in the political system, the legal system or the police. And lack of safety, the person feels unsafe walking around in their own area after dark. In choosing the threshold on each of these indicators, we sought to choose a threshold that was as similar as possible in terms of identifying a certain proportion of the population. There's always going to be a certain element of arbitrariness, but we did try a number of different indicators and a number of different thresholds, and the results were reasonably robust against choice of different thresholds. So we decided to choose a threshold that was as close as possible to the income poverty level for the population as a whole, so around about 15.2%. So on each threshold, we got as close as we could to that cutoff, or on each indicator, I should say, we got as close as we could to that. Income poverty for the adult population is a little lower at 14.6% than it is for the population that includes children. Deprivation, 13%, and so on down the line. You can see that we got reasonably close for most of them. We were a little bit high on local nuisance, 20% of the population was identified, and a little low on lacking social support, just 6.7%. So now we have a set of 11 indicators, and we have a threshold on these 11 indicators. So the next question is, on how many of these indicators do people show problems, and where are we going to set the threshold for deciding on how many of the indicators they need to show problems in order to be considered to be multidimensionally deprived? And this is what the distribution looks like. If we were to take the union approach and pick people who were lacking on any of these dimensions, we'd end up with 70% of the population, not very useful. We don't have anybody at all who was lacking on all 11 of the dimensions, not very useful either. We were toying between choosing either three or more, which gave us 25.5%, or choosing four or more, which would have given us about 13%. In the end, because we wanted to demonstrate the results broken down by age group, we went for the slightly larger number so that we would have a sufficient number of cases in each age group. But the results are not very sensitive. The conclusions are not very sensitive to the particular threshold that's chosen here. So one of the things that the adjusted headcount ratio does is it allows us to look at differences in the level of multidimensional quality of life deficits. And there are three different indicators of the level. First of all, there's the headcount, and that's simply the one that I showed already. What percentage of the population are deprived on three or more of these indicators? 25.25%. The intensity then is of those with three or more deficits, on what percent of the 11 indicators do they have problems? And the percentage is 37%, which amounts to just over four. So in other words, of those who have three or more problems, on average, they have roughly four problems. And the final indicator then combines these two. That's the adjusted headcount ratio. It's simply the product of the headcount and the intensity. 9.46%. It can be interpreted as indicating the proportion of deficits experienced by people with multidimensional quality of life problems as a share of the maximum possible. And the maximum possible would be if 100% of the population lacked all 11 or had problems on all 11 of these indicators. So it comes to 9.46%. And it's calculated using censoring so that people who don't have problems on three or more are set back to zero on the adjusted headcount ratio. In the next slide, I'm going to show the decomposition of the adjusted headcount ratio by indicator. So if you take all of the problems experienced by the people with three or more problems, what percent are of each type? So what percent are material deprivation, income poverty, and so on? And if you looking clockwise, starting from the top, financial stress, mental distress, health problems, local nuisance, housing quality, deprivation, trust, all of these account for about a similar proportion, 10 to 11% of the total. Crowding is somewhat smaller. Okay, the overall level of crowding was quite similar to the overall level of any of these other indicators on average. But it doesn't always occur as part of that multidimensional package. So it's going to be a little more unusual as part of the multidimensional package. Similarly for income poverty, and if you remember in 2013, back in the first slide, this was a period where incomes of households were changing very rapidly because you were starting to have a sharp fall in the unemployment rate. Plus income in SILC is measured for the previous 12 months, so there's going to be a little bit of a lag in it. That might be the reason it accounts for just 7% in the current sample, because there's a little bit of slippage in terms of the reference period for income versus the other indicators that we have here. Safety is a smaller component, just 6% of the total, and social support, which we already saw affected a smaller proportion of the population, just 4%. So if you look at all of the problems experienced by those with three or more, this is the composition. This is the kinds of problems that are significant. Now, this is for the adult population as a whole. It really gets interesting when you start to compare groups. It's the kind of analysis that allows us to ask whether, when different age groups have multidimensional quality of life problems, are we talking about the same dimensions? Are we talking about different dimensions? And what about different social class groups? So I'm just going to very quickly show you some of the results by age group. Now, just for reference here, I also show the poverty and basic deprivation figures. And you can see that in general, and this has been the case in Ireland for at least the past decade, since about the early 1990s it started to change, older adults have less of a problem in terms of material deprivation, in terms of poverty, than younger adults. And if you look at the ratio of the rate for the youngest To the oldest group, it's 2.6 for poverty and 2.5 for basic deprivation. When you look at the head count, it follows a very similar pattern. The differences by age group are not as strong. The ratio is 1.6. But the head count, the percentage of people with three or more problems, is higher for younger than older adults. The intensity doesn't vary as much. The ratio of the intensity for the youngest to the oldest is 1.1. So in other words, when they lack three or more of these quality of life dimensions, they're likely to lack a similar number on average. And the adjusted headcount ratio then is mainly driven by the differences in the headcount. And the ratio is 1.8 if you compare the oldest age group to the youngest age group. So in terms of the level of quality of life, multidimensional quality of life problems, it follows the pattern that we might have expected from looking at the more traditional income and deprivation indicators, being more of a problem for younger than for older adults. Looking at the composition then, if you decompose the problems experienced by those with three or more into the 11 different dimensions, first of all, I'm going to show a number of dimensions that don't vary a whole lot by age. Housing quality problems don't vary very much. Mental distress doesn't vary a whole lot. Trust or mistrust, rather, in institutions doesn't vary a whole lot. When we come to social support, you find that it tends to be more of an issue for those who have quality of life problems in the middle years. It's less of an issue for the youngest and oldest age group. And then we have a group of items that are more consequential for younger than for older adults. Financial stress, very big difference there between the youngest and oldest. Crowding, much more of an issue for younger adults, younger households, especially households with children. Deprivation is more of an issue, and poverty is more of an issue. So we're talking about the population now who have three or more quality of life problems. And when you're looking at that population, that's the composition of the problems for these groups. When you look at the older adults then, the gap gets filled up. Local nuisance, that would be problems of crime or vandalism in the area, for instance, or problems of pollution, tends to be a little bit more of a problem. Safety, feeling unsafe, and health problems, no surprise there, but it's kind of nice to see that it works very nicely with this index. Health is indeed more of an issue for older adults. Crowding, financial stress for younger adults. Local nuisance also a bit more of an issue for the older age group. Looking at the differences by social class then, we use the European socioeconomic classification developed by Rose and Harrison, and we group the social classes into four categories: professional and managerial, and that also includes higher and lower professionals, managers, and employers of 10 or more. Intermediate, which includes the intermediate service class and technicians. Self-employed and farm, it includes small employers, people who employ fewer than 10, but the vast majority of them are actually own account workers just working on their own. And manual, etc., which are the lower socioeconomic groups. It includes skilled, semi-skilled, and unskilled manual workers, routine occupations, lower service and sales occupations, and those who never worked. And we take the socioeconomic class of the householder, that's the person responsible for the accommodation, or if a couple is responsible for the accommodation, we take the higher socioeconomic status on the grounds that that's the one that's likely to be more consequential for the overall standard of living and life chances of the household. Looking at poverty and deprivation by social class, first of all, just as you'd expect, you see big differences between the social classes in terms of the levels of both of these indicators. The rate for the manual social class is 3.4 times higher than the professional and managerial group in the case of poverty, 2.3 times higher in the case of deprivation. I mentioned that I was going to talk about another issue with income poverty, and you can see that here if you look at the self-employed and farmer class. Their level of income poverty is quite high, the highest, in fact, across the social classes at 24%. And it's a standard finding in this kind of research that they look poorer when you look at their income than they do when you look at their living standards, because when you look at their deprivation rate, they're quite similar to the intermediate social class, 28%, 29%, rather than the much higher figure for the manual social class. When we look at the headcount intensity and adjusted headcount ratio, you see that it very much follows the pattern of deprivation, being much higher for the manual social class than it is for the professional and managerials. Again, the main driver of the differences by social class is the headcount rather than the intensity. The intensity varies a bit by social class, greater intensity for the manual, etc. group. But the main driver of the differences and of the overall ratio, the 2.8 ratio between the manual and the professional managerial, is the headcount, the difference in the percentage who have three or more problems. Looking at the decomposition then, I'll just go through this very quickly. Do you know, there's nothing to write home about there, really, is there? Apart from the fact that the self-employed seem to experience higher levels of financial stress and poverty, the differences by social class in the shape or colour or flavour of quality of life problems are relatively minor. So in contrast to the differences by age group, where we saw very dramatic age differences in the composition of quality of life problems, here we're not seeing very much in terms of differences at all. So when people in different social classes have quality of life problems, they're kind of similar, apart from the financial stress and the poverty, which is really an artifact of measurement of the self-employed. The financial stress is probably legitimate because self-employed people in Ireland are typically not entitled to unemployment payments. So when the economy goes pear-shaped, when construction goes pear-shaped, and a lot of self-employed people have worked in construction, their only choice is to keep working and do their best to make what living they can. So financial stress is a genuine problem for this group. To summarise then, we apply the methodology here to looking at multidimensional quality of life issues in the Irish case post-recession in 2013. The main source of variation across groups we found was in the headcount rather than in the intensity of quality of life problems. There were large differences in the level of quality of life deficits by age and by social class, slightly more differences in the level by social class, where you had a ratio of 2.8 times higher for the manual versus the professional managerial. The ratio for between the worst and the best age group was 1.8. There was a larger variation in the profile by age group than by social class. So life cycle stage, very important to the particular disadvantages people are going to be experiencing. It would be very interesting, in fact, to extend this analysis and see the extent to which it's true in other countries. For younger adults, we found that things like crowding, financial distress, deprivation and poverty were more significant. For older adults, the main drivers were health, safety, and local nuisance. And just very quickly, the adjusted headcount ratio is quite a sophisticated method that is a middle ground between the inclusiveness of the union approach, which takes account a large number of dimensions, and the sharp focus on severe problems of the intersection approach, which can also have its place. The approach is consistent with the need to take account of a broader range of quality of life dimensions other than just income, and we saw that it has particular strengths in that regard. We saw that there's a disadvantage in relying on income in the event of a recession, where you can have a collapse in the poverty income threshold, and also in measuring the living standards and quality of life of the self-employed. And the multidimensional quality of life indicator highlighted group differences in the composition of disadvantage. So it allows monitoring of disadvantage towards the middle of the social class and income spectrum. It allows us to look at what's happening to older adults whose standard of living might be below the very low threshold set by the basic deprivation and poverty thresholds. We saw that the most pressing problems of old age in Ireland are connected with health and feelings of insecurity. And we saw that financial strain emerged as a particular issue, probably in the context of early post-recession days for the self-employed and farmers. In future research, in general, the choice of dimension, as I said, needs to be informed by the purpose of the indicator, which groups are being compared. So in future research, we'd like to expand it to look at the working age population and include indicators of work-life balance, quality of work, jobless households. Certain dimensions we weren't able to include because of the constraints here, the top population we want to compare. So some phenomena that weren't relevant in this case may be relevant if you're focusing on different comparisons, and of course some data wasn't actually available in the context of the SILC module. And a very important one, incidentally, for Ireland might be the quality of public services, because one of the trade-offs in the Irish context, when the government sought to maintain cash transfer payments, one of the trade-offs was that the public services suffered. So you had cuts in education and in health that are going to take quite some time to remedy. So thank you very much for your attention.